I'm pretty sure this one is about Apple and Yahoo.
Apple and Yahoo. That would have been a great deal. Imagine life if Apple had paid $47 billion for Yahoo.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a special recording of the GeekWire podcast. We are on location at Microsoft Build, the big developer conference in downtown Seattle. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
And I'm GeekWire cloud and enterprise editor Tom Krazit.
So we have just walked out of the big keynote stage here at the Microsoft Build Developer Conference. Tom, as his title would suggest, covers all of this stuff, cloud and enterprise. And this is really just sort of, you're in the thick of it here, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, this is arguably the biggest event of the year that Microsoft puts on. You know, they're really trying to impress upon developers all they can offer across Azure, across Office 365. And then, you know, we also saw a lot of things today, some interesting things with HoloLens and mixed reality stuff that I'm sure we'll get into at some point.
Absolutely. We will be having Microsoft's Scott Guthrie, the executive vice president of the company's cloud and AI group, joining us shortly. And later on, we'll also have Lorraine Bardeen, who is GM and studio manager for mixed reality, which was one of the most interesting demos up there, I thought, and really a contrast between Microsoft in terms of its enterprise focus with things like HoloLens, and then Google and Facebook with Oculus and the consumer focus. So we're going to be talking with her about that. But before we do that, Tom, let's play a little bit of play-by-play here and analysis. What did you think? What were the biggest announcements, the things that really stood out, and maybe even the biggest disappointments, things that you would have wanted to have seen that were not announced on stage at Build today?
I think the biggest thing that was announced on stage today was the AI for Accessibility program, which CEO Satya Nadella, obviously means a lot to him personally, but also means a lot to this industry as well. You know, we heard a lot of talk from him about responsibility, about how technology companies have this responsibility to the planet to use technology in ways that that improves the lives of everyone, not just venture capitalists and software engineers.
It's interesting because this is really a follow-up to something that Microsoft announced last year, and that was AI for Earth and the environment, and this whole idea of using artificial intelligence to do good in the world that way. This was a basically the sequel to that.
Yeah, and some of the things were really interesting. They showed off how you know, kids who are having trouble learning to read can take advantage of custom software that's built for them and moves at their pace. And there were some interesting things about how, you know, two parents who are blind were able to share experiences with their son who has regular sight. The translation capabilities I thought were really interesting, like being able to use some sort of cognitive service for, you know, you and I to have a conversation in a different language with someone we've just met, you know, or even across the internet. I mean, there's some amazing things that they showed off.
In terms of actual
they
technology.
They probably work.
Yeah, exactly. So in terms of actual technology announcements, Microsoft last year at Build introduced this concept of the intelligent edge.
Yes.
First off, what the heck is that, Tom?
Well, it's, you know, this is basically a recognition of the fact, computing goes through all these cycles, right? Like you used to do everything on your PC, and then everything kind of shifted to the cloud, and a lot of what happened on the device really wasn't all that interesting. It's starting to shift back a little bit because, you know, a lot of applications, some of these real-time Internet of Things applications, they can't wait for the data to come back from a data center thousands of miles away. They actually need to do the work they need to do right there and then. So this is kind of what he's talking about. An intelligent edge computing, there's a lot of different concepts that are involved here.
So as we said, we are here live at Microsoft Build, the big developer conference in downtown Seattle. Scott, have a seat. It's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
And go ahead and scooch on up to as close as you can to that mic. And we should say, you do not have to hold this mic.
Okay.
That was a great ad lib. For those of you who didn't catch it, Scott did some double duty as a mic holder today after some technical difficulties.
Yeah, it was fun. It was, you know. Play by ear, and it was a good ad lib.
That's great. Well, we're doing the same thing here. It's great to have you here, Scott, and thanks for doing the show. So Scott Guthrie, as we said, is the executive vice president of Microsoft's Cloud and AI group. So Scott, right before you came in, I was asking Tom to define for me the intelligent edge. So Tom, you want to take a crack, and Scott can tell you whether or not you're right?
Sure.
Well, I was describing it as sort of a shift in, you know, the centralization and decentralization of computing, I guess. You know, at some one point, our PCs did a lot of the work. We shifted a lot of the work then to the cloud, and now we're shifting back to this era in which devices at the edge can't wait for the cloud to decide for them. They need to do more of that work themselves. So how was that? Was that good?
That's not bad. Yeah, I mean, it's a good description. I mean, I think I kind of think of it less as per se even like shifting, and more just, you know, we're seeing huge increases in cloud capacity and usage, and expect that to only increase going forward. And, you know, I think what's happening is we're also seeing this, you know, continual shift also then in terms of the client computing on the edge or the devices. And both in terms of, you know, I'd say more traditional form factors, things like PCs or smartphones or tablets, but also increasingly, you know, new form factors and devices. And
what are some of those? Like what these form factors that you're seeing emerge?
You know, we showed a couple examples today, you know, ranging from internet-connected buttons for simple scenarios or speakers or microphones that are, you know, listening to ambient noise and can do AI processing, to drones that we flew around during the keynote, to, you know, drilling bits in oil refinery or, you know, operating theaters in a hospital. You know, I think you're going to basically see, and, you know, the estimates are around 20 billion internet-connected devices in the world by 2020. So that's less than 2 years away. And that's, you know, three times the number of people on the planet. And so I think you're going to see the edge processing both get richer on each individual device, but also just the volume of devices out there that are going to be connected and, you know, want to be able to run some local processing and be cloud connected and be able to aggregate that and do even richer things in the cloud.
So one of the things that you announced today was called Project Connect for Azure. And as somebody who still has a Xbox 360 Kinect in his living room, I was inspired to see at least the brand name live on. I realize it's a different project, but inspired in part by some of that technology that goes back to the original days of the motion sensor on the game console. What is Project Connect for Azure for people who missed this announcement?
Well, in general, I mean, I think one of the things that we're seeing is, especially for things like vision, or object detection or speech or any type of sort of audio detection, you know, is if you're pumping all of that up into the cloud, you know, the latency involved of just copying bits across the internet, you know, means that you can't get sort of the real-time experiences that increasingly consumers want to have. And so, you know, one of the things we're working on is how do you bring AI down to the edge, both in terms of software, but also increasingly in terms of hardware as well. And so with Project Connect for Azure, one of the things we're looking to do is how do we take, you know, some of that work that we had and have used inside, whether it's HoloLens, whether it's around the Kinect that we built for Xbox, how do we package that up and enable developers to be able to take advantage of it and do local AI inferencing of audio, vision, object detection, so you can get near real-time, instantaneous style experiences on the edge. And be able to connect them and build even better apps. And so, you know, that's one of the things that we're looking to do with Project Connect is be able to provide a device that developers can use to build their own application experiences.
How big a device are we talking about here when you think about potential applications for this?
You know, for a lot of these devices, they're going to be very small. I mean, Project Connect is designed, you know, it's sort of like a small camera. Yeah, some people use it standalone. Some people want to be able to connect it to another smart device running on the edge. And, you know, the beauty of a lot of these things is they don't have to be big. I mean, even the keynote, we showed this sort of internet-connected Wi-Fi button. And you might say, well, that seems like a gimmick. What would you use for that? But you think about the number of scenarios where, you know, people on the road are counting cars or, you know, across bridges, or how many attendants are coming in and out of a movie theater. You know, those are all scenarios that people do today in a very manual way. Once you can actually connect it to the cloud and connect it to apps, you can start to build much, much richer experiences. And I think it's going to be also, how do you compose all these different devices together into kind of overall solutions and applications? And it's going to be a fun time for developers.
Another announcement that you made today was the open sourcing of the Azure IoT Edge Runtime.
Yep.
What does that do? What does that enable for people to change in terms of the devices on the edge? And can you explain that in terms that I can understand, Scott, which is a real challenge?
Sure. Well, our Azure IoT Edge offering is something we've seen just tremendous interest in. And it basically runs on a device. So it could be your Windows PC or, you know, your Mac laptop, or it runs on Raspberry Pis. It runs on, you know, a wide variety of different systems running any operating system. And it makes it really easy for developers to basically build applications and run them on the edge and distribute them and manage them through the cloud. And we did a great demo in my keynote where Jeff just showed off how easy it was to build a simple app that was talking to a camera and doing face detection with a camera, all running locally on that edge device. And Azure IoT Edge makes it easy to do that. And what we've done is we've announced the open sourcing of it so that developers can take advantage of seeing the code. They can contribute features or bug fixes to the code if they want to. And it's just part of a broader move that we've done across Microsoft the last couple of years of really embracing open source. And that doesn't mean just using it, but also contributing back to it with our own projects.
It seems like you guys really put a flag in the ground this year around IoT in general. I mean, how important is that emerging technology to your overall strategy, your competitive strategy, as you look out across the cloud?
Well, I think if you look, even just look 18 months from now, if there's 20 billion devices in the world that are internet connected, the vast majority of those will be IoT. And, we'd very much see IoT as the next frontier, both as a platform company and a cloud vendor, but more importantly, just as humans, it is going to be one of these things where when we wake up in the morning, get ready, drive to our car, drive somewhere for work, get a coffee from Starbucks, all three of those scenarios we showed IoT related today in the keynotes, real applications that aren't science fiction, but are, companies doing it today. Starbucks was in my keynote talking about using IoT with the baristas to basically deliver a better cup of coffee. We showed similarly, whether it's retail, whether it's around manufacturing, whether it's around consumer devices, all those things that we kind of take for granted going forward as human beings are going to be in some way, shape, or form augmented and made better using IoT and AI.
Well, it's really interesting how much you talked about IoT and AI and also data privacy. These devices and these systems are going to generate untold amounts of data, personal data about people in their lives, in their homes, in their businesses. I understand the commitment Microsoft is making to, value that privacy, but how do you plan to live up to that as these services evolve?
Well, I think, trust, it needs to be at the foundation of both the software you build going forward, as well as, in the case of like a cloud vendor like us, the platform that we provide. And so we put in a tremendous amount of focus around data sovereignty, data residency, compliance certifications. We have more compliance certifications, more countries with data residency, and more data sovereignty areas than any other cloud vendor. And I think the other thing that's going to be important as we think about AI more broadly is this really important focus around using AI for good and not abusing people's trust in the data and the devices that they integrate and expose. And I think trust is going to be at a premium as a consumer when you make your decision on what devices you do. And even things like some of the demos, just to bring it back to technology, those cases where we have cameras that are doing face detection. One beautiful thing about doing edge-based computing is my face wasn't being uploaded to the cloud to do the detection on it. All that AI detection was being done on the device. My data was never leaving my home. Having that type of balance between edge and cloud-based computing, I think is going to be important just from a data privacy perspective going forward, because you don't want all that data always being uploaded into another environment.
So Scott, I know you've got to run to another appointment, but one last question here. You've got 6,000 developers here. It's one of the largest build developer conferences Microsoft has had. What is your comment to these developers competitively? Why should they consider Azure over something like Google Cloud Platform, Amazon Web Services? What's your pitch? Because AWS still has the hearts and minds of many startups and developers, and that's something where you guys are really trying to make inroads.
Well, I think the important thing when you think about developers is at the end of the day, developers value, product truth, and they really value, what are the tools that make them successful, whether they're development IDEs, whether they're languages, whether they're cloud platforms. And, they value in terms of both being able to build amazing experiences and be able to do it with high productivity. And in the case of, for an enterprise or a company that has existing investments, how easily can you also help me bring my existing systems forward and integrate with it and do that in a trusted way? And when we talk about Azure, and what we try to really show in the keynote, and I sort of led up front and at the end, it's around productivity. As you saw, I think 9 or 10 demos in my keynote writing code. This isn't sort of just marketecture. It's like, let's actually speak to the hearts and minds of the developers and show them just how easy and powerful it is and how open we are now in terms of the languages, tools, and frameworks that we support. We showed off hybrid and showed how you can integrate with existing systems and really start to leverage the cloud in a really fast way without having to rip and replace everything. You know, we showed off AI and intelligence and how you can basically weave that in to all your solutions, both in terms of AI itself, but also with things like Cosmos DB and the new multi-master write support that really is groundbreaking in terms of enabling you to store and process data. And we talked a lot today, which is sort of unique, I'd say, for a tech conference, around trust and around the importance of both building secure solutions, but also from a privacy perspective, you know, really doing what's right for the world. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm a big believer in show, don't tell. And, you know, I think today seemed like from the Twitter and from the feedback we've gotten, people are pretty excited about what they saw and how much they could do and how easy it was. And, you know, we're going to keep telling that story and keep showing it. And, you know, we expect to continue to see our business grow the way it has, which has been phenomenal.
Great. Well, Scott, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Scott.
Yeah,
thanks.
It's fun to be part of this experiment with you. So
cool.
Let you
hang
off. Thanks. All right, that is Scott Guthrie, the Executive Vice President of Microsoft's Cloud and AI Group. We are here at Microsoft Build, the big developer conference in downtown Seattle, and we will be right back with a look at the mixed reality landscape at Microsoft with the GM and Studio Manager for Mixed Reality, Lorraine Bardeen. That's coming up next on GeekWire. All right, we are back here at Microsoft's Build Developer Conference in downtown Seattle, where 6,000 developers have joined Microsoft to hear the latest about Azure AI and other pitches from the company as it attempts to compete against the likes of Amazon and Google in the cloud. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about mixed reality with Lorraine Bardeen. She is the general manager of mixed reality at Microsoft, and she'll be stepping into the chair next. And here comes Lorraine right now, actually. we'll have to do some armchair analysis later. Come on in, Lorraine.
Hey, guys.
How's it going?
Welcome.
Great.
It's great to see you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, so we're live on Facebook Live, and we're recording for the podcast. For those of you who might have missed part of Scott's conversation, we will have the full podcast on geekwire.com. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And now we're going to jump into the world of mixed reality. So Lorraine Bardeen is the general manager and studio manager of mixed reality at Microsoft. Lorraine, give us a sense for your job.
Sure. Yeah, so I head up the engineering team that makes all of our mixed reality applications for the workplace. So you can think of them as business applications, and we announced two of them today, Microsoft Remote Assist and Microsoft Layout. We've been working on them for a while, and it was pretty exciting to get to announce them today. I can talk more about that in a minute. But so my team is full of all sorts of engineers. We have software engineers, we have designers, artists, PMs, business people, who all work together. And when you hear that word studio, they work together in cross-functional teams, because it's those cross-functional teams that really helps us get these products to market in an integrated way. You know, when you're designing for mixed reality, you're designing for the real world. And so you need to understand 3D. You need to understand people's workflows in a really intimate way. So we spend a lot of time with our customers, really close with them, understanding how they work and what are going to provide those breakthroughs.
It's interesting. Over the past week, we've seen some fascinating developments in the world, especially virtual reality.
Sure.
With Oculus Go and the new device from Lenovo built on Google Daydream. And so clearly, other tech companies are going into this world of virtual reality, which is obviously different from what you're doing, but in a very consumer-oriented way. And for me, for somebody who's watched Microsoft over the years, it's fascinating to see the company go in a different direction that plays to its historical strengths in the enterprise. What is your strategy with mixed reality at Microsoft?
Yeah, so I mean, since we started talking about mixed reality, when we launched or announced HoloLens, we started describing mixed reality as the spectrum. A really broad spectrum that anytime that you're bringing the digital world into the real world, that's how we think of mixed reality. And so it includes a broad view. And, you know, we partner with OEM, original equipment manufacturers, to produce devices that have much more of a virtual reality immersive experience. I think you guys are probably familiar with those. And that's on one side of the spectrum. And then the other side of the spectrum is HoloLens. And HoloLens really lets you bring your entire workflow right into the real world. And it also is untethered, right? And we believe that from watching and paying attention to our customers, as you said, we've been working with them for decades. We really understand those commercial workflows. We understand what unlocks value for our customers. We understand where they are in their digital transformation journey. So we want to show up for where they are. And we're able to do that with really paying attention to what they're doing.
For those people watching who didn't see some of the demonstrations earlier today, can you give us some examples of what you did show off and what kind of workers we're talking about here that are using these products and services?
Gotcha. So you'll hear Microsoft talk about information workers or knowledge workers. These are people who mostly work in ways like, you know, at offices, on desks, using PCs, mobile, tablets, et cetera. And those workers are relatively well served by technology. We have to keep innovating, but they have a lot of choices at their hands. And then there's first line workers. So that's a term that Microsoft coined, but you might have heard task workers or deskless workers or something like that. And we're using the term first line workers because it's all about being the people, the 80% of the world's labor force who are first to the customer. They're the first to the problems in the field. They really represent companies, and so they're critical to the success of every company, but they've been largely underserved by technology. In many cases, they're moving around the world. They're using their hands. They have gloves on to do their job. They're using tools. They're not able to use the technology that's been available over the past couple of decades, and so it's really been a breakthrough with head-mounted devices like HoloLens, where you can see the real world, you can move around, and you can still use your hands to do your job. That's providing a pretty amazing leapfrog and acceleration for first-line workers to solve real problems in the real world. So today we announced two, what do you call them? Products. Two products.
We'll call them products, sure.
Two applications that are really targeted at first-line workers in their companies. One's called Microsoft Remote Assist. And just briefly, what this enables first-line workers to do is bring an expert virtually on site with them. That expert can see right through their eyes, through the HoloLens. They can see what they're seeing, and they can annotate right into their real world. Because with HoloLens, it's making this spatial map of the world, and so they can write right on the machine they're trying to fix, or the, circle the wire, you know, cut this one, not that one. And they can collaborate through shared video calling and image sharing. And so Remote Assist, it's using Microsoft Teams, so you can count on secure communications, et cetera. And then those experts, for companies, this is a huge breakthrough. Because right now, they're sending people out in vans all day long, out in the field, because the right expert is never at the right spot. Some of our customers are even sending people from Europe to, you know, a factory in North Carolina or to Alaska or wherever it is to fix the machine, because these are specialized machines. So now they're looking at millions of dollars of savings in travel costs. So that's Microsoft Remote Assist. And then the other one, Microsoft Layout, this is about bringing your space designs into the real world so you can design and make decisions in context. Now, this is something that, like, probably those of us in this room, you know, we redesign rooms now and then. Not that often. Maybe we'll move a couch around.
I'm never entrusted with redesigning the room.
Exactly. So. And you might come home, you might notice it or not when you come home, right? But there are roles in the first line workflows and then in others where that is the primary goal. That's what you're doing every day. Think of a manufacturing line. Every time you're changing up a product, you have to switch out the manufacturing line, new machines, new specialized robotics, etc. Or think about like a retail establishment. Every time you're doing a spring, fall, monthly refresh, you change all the end caps, change everything around. So right now, those designs are being done in design software, which is perfectly good for that purpose. But it's so hard to make the decisions because the people on site, they can't visualize it in real life. That's really hard for us to visualize things in 3D that are on a 2D screen. And so the breakthrough with Microsoft Layout is you load up your designs and you can prepare them on a PC, you can prepare them anywhere. You can use your existing 3D CAD files, you know, different file formats, FBX, GLTF, STP, we support a lot of them. But then you bring them into the real world and everyone can be looking at it at once and make a quick decision.
So the idea really here is very similar to what the original vision was with HoloLens, where you're able to look through the lens and see the digital reality on top of the physical reality. And I was sitting there looking at that manufacturing floor demonstration that you showed on stage and thinking, I really could have used this at our last GeekWire office remodel. If I could have just stood in the middle and had the dimensions of the chairs and the desks that we wanted to put into the space. Will this ultimately turn into a consumer technology? A consumer meaning something that will impact us in our lives, perhaps through a specialist that might have the HoloLens and use it in this way?
I don't see why it wouldn't. I mean, anything that you can watch and respond to that fast, there's real value there for everyone.
If I get it, then clearly it's meant for the mass market, right? Is that what you're saying?
That was a subtle underlying point. No. Clearly there's value there for everyone, but it's important to us to just really look people in the eye and say, I know I can help you right now in a way that's going to transform your business versus, hey, this might be cool for you to try. And it's very clear where we are right now with that. And companies right now, they need this help with the things that Microsoft Layout, Microsoft Remote Assist help with. And we're here to provide that. And I think you're right. I think you're going to see those sort of B2C scenarios come next, business to consumer scenarios, before we see like everyone at home rearranging their rooms every second.
One thing I've been thinking about as you've been describing this is, you know, given the trends in manufacturing and factories and automation, I mean, are you just doing the advanced work for the robots here in gathering all this data?
Yeah, so one of the things we talk about is there is no shortage of jobs, et cetera, in manufacturing. All of these sectors are growing. And this is something our customers bring to us a lot. They need help actually freeing up their workers to do more and more high-value work. There's so much complex, interesting work to be done to really, you know, manufacturing industry is at the verge of this huge digital transformation. So there's a lot of, human-focused work that needs to be done. Thinking, critical thinking, problem-solving, creativity. If you watch that video with Lee in it from ZF Manufacturing, he says, I spend all my time doing creative problem-solving. And so the more things he can offload that are just rote work that are not high value for him to do, the more he can dedicate what the company needs him to do. And that's where you see us start to pull in some of the Azure IoT edge functionality so that these world-sensing devices can take on some of that low-value work and free up the workers to do things that they're really, really more than capable of doing so they can contribute to their company's success.
These products will gather a lot of data on the creative process, though.
For sure.
How people make decisions and how people look at environments and, you know, someone looked at this, they saw this image and they decided this. And then a computer can figure that out over time, more or less, right?
There's a lot of, just like, I don't know if you use workplace analytics or if you've tried it in your sort of email and understanding how you email and how you use your time. I do at work and I find it fascinating every week who I'm emailing with more and how I use my time. It's a functionality provided by our M365 products. So anyway, for sure. That's why we're calling it spatial analytics. Just like workplace analytics for the PC or web analytics for the web, spatial analytics are going to help companies understand how their space is being used, how people are moving through their space, how these workflows are being performed. And as Satya was saying in the keynote, just like all of the other data, this is data that is owned by the companies. And it is their enterprise knowledge graph. It's under their control, their privacy and security profile. And we're here to just produce the functionality that they can use in their own company.
All right, we are talking with Lorraine Bardeen. She is the general manager and studio manager of mixed reality at Microsoft. We are at Microsoft Build on location in downtown Seattle. And we'll be right back on the GeekWire podcast. All right, welcome back. We are speaking with Lorraine Bardeen. She is the general manager and studio manager of mixed reality at Microsoft. We are on location at the big Microsoft Build Developer Conference in downtown Seattle. Lorraine, with both of these, how close are they to market? Are these just sort of closed betas, or are these things that any company could use today?
Yeah, great question. I should have said that. I'm obviously not doing my job here.
No, that's why we're here.
So they're both available for public preview on May 22nd. That means anyone around the world can download them and as a limited time public preview. We don't have our exact date yet because we want to pay close attention to how these are working for our customers. That said, we have been in private preview with several customers. We shared a couple of them today who have been actively using these products and their workflows and helping us find areas we could improve. So our next step is public preview. We're going to be paying attention and then we'll be excited to announce when they're generally available.
How much would you expect to pay for this system?
I don't have any information on that yet, but they are available completely free for the public preview for a limited time. Yeah, and really where pricing for anything we're going to make at Microsoft is going to be paying close attention to the value we're providing to our customers. And that's what we're doing. We're working closely with customers and really understanding these products should be saving them a lot of money. In some cases, they might be opening them up to new business opportunities they didn't have before, but they absolutely should be helping them on their digital transformation journey.
This is a super wonky Microsoft question, but I have to ask, where is your group in relation to Alex Kipman's new group, and how does that work? For people who don't know, Alex Kipman was basically the inventor of the Kinect and a driving force behind HoloLens,
yep.
But now he's in this sort of other area, right?
Well, it probably seems that way from the outside, but we work together every single day. So Alex Kittman's team builds the operating system, the perception APIs, like a lot of rich, rich platform and tech components that we use for everything we build. So we're really joined at the hip, and we work together. I mean, people from our teams are working together every hour of every day. And then we partner on areas that we're going to go to market together with. And then same thing across the other devices as well, because I'm not sure if you were going to ask this, but Microsoft Layout is one of the devices where an immersive or VR experience is a really important part of the workflow we've discovered. So if you imagine, the breakthrough value for this product is when you're on site and you need to make a decision quickly with a lot of other people that you would never be able to visualize otherwise. However, sometimes you can't get on site quite yet. So a common scenario is where they're changing over a manufacturing line and they haven't decided how to lay it out for the next round, but the equipment isn't off the floor yet. So a space designer, a planner, a warehouse leader might spend a little time setting up the plan ahead of time, and they might use one of the devices, the Windows Mixed Reality devices, to do that. And that's what we're seeing over and over. Well, they'll lay out a room, put all the equipment in, sort of get a sense of it, do a little planning, and then they take the next step and go on site and collaborate with the team. So we're seeing that, you know, that type of crossover to commercial VR as well in some of these scenarios.
Interesting. Yeah. One of the big announcements that was made during Satya Nadella's time on stage, the Microsoft CEO, was something called AI for Accessibility.
Yeah.
How might mixed reality play into that whole initiative?
Yeah, I think it's so many people's favorite topic. It's one of the reasons so many people have such a strong purpose about working at Microsoft, because we believe that mission around empowering everyone. So the announcements like AI for Accessibility is so satisfying and exciting. And let me give you some specific examples. So already we're using really rich speech and vision cognitive services in HoloLens and in any related application. So already it gives you some flexibility in the senses that you require people to use. So already there's some accessibility-friendly features of the device. So there are some people who use speech only. They don't use any sort of hand input or keyboard or mouse input. And then vice versa, there's some people who choose not to use speech at all. So we're on that path. There's also a lot of developers who are doing really, really interesting things around accessibility from an app perspective. So I just heard about a developer who's made an app for HoloLens that teaches students with autism and gives them some exposure to how to read emotional cues and how to interact using verbal cues with other folks. Also, there was an amazing app I saw for escaping a smoke-filled room using audio-only cues, right? I mean, just lots of really interesting things that people are working on. And then I think we're going to be watching closely as object recognition capabilities increase using deep neural networks and machine learning, because as computer vision is increasingly capable of recognizing objects, that will help people with visual impairments who might not know what's in front of them or what they're about to encounter. So you see a lot of that coming out of our research department. That's just being fed right into our product lines.
What's the most mind-blowing thing you've ever done with a HoloLens?
Ooh, I would say, hands down, the first time I gave the HoloLens to my kids, my son, without even knowing what was on it, opened up an app and put a holographic cannon to explode his sister. So the reason this is so mind-blowing is that I'm not worried at all about the next generation's ability to figure out how to integrate mixed reality, AI, quantum computing, everything else. But we also have to remember that we're just human. And fundamentally, in the end, we're all just going to like explode our sister, put holographic poo around the room, and you know, we just have to keep a sense of humor about what we're inventing, I think.
So I mentioned at the very beginning the competitive landscape and the fact that we have seen these consumer virtual reality devices come out. And obviously Microsoft, through its partners, is working on devices, there are devices in the market that work with Windows 10. Is there a risk, though, to the broader vision for this virtual reality continuum if Microsoft is not really front and center in the consumer market? In other words, if people associate Facebook and Google and others with virtual and alternative realities, is there a risk that they're going to say, oh, Microsoft's not really in that game, and that enterprise play may suffer?
I think that people already spend a lot and enjoy a lot of their social time using, Facebook and other products like that. And I don't see that changing dramatically, and I think that's great. People get a lot of joy out of it. And people get a lot of joy out of entertaining and gaming on Xbox Live and, related platforms and Mixer and everything like that. So, you know, we definitely play a part in people's downtime, their entertainment time, their social time. And I think we've always tried to really weave that together to acknowledge, or like not just acknowledge, to embrace that this, it's the same person. It's the same person who goes to work in the morning and works all day and then goes home and games, or maybe on their lunch break, they're doing a lot of sort of social activity. And we might not be the, you know, the person who's providing the experience in all those cases. In most cases, we won't be. But we're there to support the person weaving in and out of those parts of their life. And I think it's going to be the same for mixed reality. Like something like HoloLens right now, where it's providing breakthrough value is really is a specialized tool or specialized experience when you need it. And that's absolutely the right way to think of it. And over time, those times are going to come up more and more during the day when this is really, wow, this really helps me. This really makes a huge difference. And that's going to come up in your work life and it's going to come up in your personal life. And I think we think of this as, it's the same person going throughout their day, and sometimes we're more important to them and sometimes we're a little less important to them, and that's okay.
What's next, to the extent that you can say?
Yeah, so I sort of gave a pretty hard hint at we're paying really close attention. We identified these five workflows and we're committed to delivering value against all of them. So we announced products against two of them today, and we're showing off a lot of work we're doing against the fifth, which is the access to spatial and IoT data. So if you make it out to the show floor, you'll see a lot of those devices I talked about there. The announcement's not any devices. The announcement is like, hey, take together Azure IoT and Microsoft Graph and think of mixed reality. The way I like to think of it is data in context. Wherever you are, you have what you need right then. And sometimes it's best provided visually. Sometimes it's best provided by just exposing some data about what's going on. So we've talked about three things we're doing there, and we're really looking forward to providing value against the other two as well.
So, and to remind us, the other two are?
The other two are training and development, and then product-focused collaboration. When people, multidisciplinary teams, come together to collaborate on a product. A great thing to look at for that is Ford showed off a multidisciplinary collaboration that they do across teams to build cars using HoloLens. And they've really found it's broken down these walls that exist between teams making the same product at a company. And it's as simple as allowing them all to see the same thing at the same time has totally changed how they think about that process.
Excellent.
Yeah. Well,
Lorraine, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much, guys.
Yeah,
thank
absolutely.
You. Thank you.
So Lorraine Bardeen is General Manager and Studio Manager of Mixed Reality at Microsoft. We're here on location at Microsoft Build. It's Todd Bishop with Tom Krazit. So Tom, you obviously are focused heavily, not as much on mixed reality, but on the cloud and what that means for Microsoft, and especially the competitive landscape with Google and Amazon is really interesting as a frame of reference. Based on what you saw here today, did Microsoft move the needle with these developers?
I'm not convinced they leapfrogged anybody. You know, I mean, Microsoft's doing a lot of interesting stuff. They're you know, not the leader in the cloud market, but they're not a laggard either. You know, they're in second place, and they're delivering a lot of technology that is interesting. The IoT stuff, you know, you can argue about, like, Amazon is doing plenty of IoT stuff. Google is doing plenty of IoT stuff. It's not that anyone's ignoring these trends. You know, it's really just about, you know, where do you care to focus your attention and your time? And if they wanted to make IoT a competitive advantage, I think it's an interesting way for them to differentiate. You know, Google has gone really hard after AI. Amazon leads in kind of everything else. So there's that. I don't think they introduced anything today where someone who wasn't in the Microsoft world would go, okay, that's it. You know, now I'm in.
Making the plunge.
But I don't think they, you know, I don't think they're behind, really, in a way that would hurt them on any of this stuff.
The one thing that we did not talk about yet, which might have been the biggest surprise of the keynote, if for only the fact that it was not included in the embargoed pre-briefing, but only hinted at, was the first public demonstration of Alexa, Amazon's Alexa, and Microsoft's Cortana talking to one another. I was sitting there trying to figure out how I would use that. In other words,
I didn't get this at all, actually.
Yeah, so the whole idea was you could use Alexa to basically invoke Cortana and do something across the two. It felt a little forced. I feel like when Microsoft and Amazon first announced this, it got a lot of attention because, you know, Cortana and Alexa are going to be friends. I think, based on what I saw there on stage, they've got a lot to prove in terms of the actual utility of this.
I think it's one of those things where, you know, maybe you've got an Echo in your house, but you want to access your work calendar, you know, so you do that through Cortana.
What's the market for that, though? That was a struggle for me to envision.
I mean, I don't know. I don't you know, I think it's for those companies, it's more about making their existing products better. It's like you're not necessarily going to buy an Echo now that you can use Cortana with it. You were probably going to buy it anyway. But, you know, that's a service that they can deliver to you that makes you feel a little bit better about that purchase.
Yeah,
I don't know. It just makes sense to integrate these things. It's only political barriers that are holding them back. So in some sense, why not?
Any other parting words from you here from Build Day One?
Not really. I was a little underwhelmed, I have to say, by some of the Azure cloud related stuff. None of it was bad. I just don't think they really, like I said, made a breakthrough or a leapfrog. You know, last year they introduced the Azure Cosmos DB, which was a very interesting new database that's actually, they announced last week, made them a lot of money. You know, I don't think we really saw anything like that this week, you know, but I'm looking forward to some presentations later in the week, sessions with key Microsoft Cloud executives to learn more.
Excellent. All right. You can check out all of our coverage at geekwire.com/cloud. And by the way, don't forget, GeekWire's Cloud Tech Summit is coming up in June.
Featuring Mark Rusinovich, the CTO of Microsoft Azure.
And other speakers, including representatives of Amazon and Google. You can find out more about that and get tickets at geekwire.com/cloud summit. That's coming up June 26th and 27th.
That's right, over in Bellevue.
In Bellevue. That's our second annual Cloud Tech Summit. It is our big technical conference of the year and really great because there are a lot of deep dive technical sessions where you can get information from people hands-on, and it's really one of the only big platform agnostic cloud tech conferences out there.
Yeah, and we've gotten a lot of really, really great technical people who have agreed to give talks at this event. So if you're a developer, it's a fantastic way to learn more about some of these emerging technologies from the people who are creating them.
All right, once again, that's geekwire.com/cloud summit. You can follow all of Tom's coverage at geekwire.com/cloud. And we are going to be continuing our coverage from Microsoft Build with the day two keynotes tomorrow, which focus on Windows.
That's right. And we might see a little bit more consumer, facing developments during that as well.
All right. Hey, thanks everybody for joining us on the live stream. Until next time, we'll talk to you from Microsoft Build. I'm Todd Bishop.
I'm Tom Krazit. Thanks a lot.
Talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the GeekWire podcast. Follow all of our coverage of tech and science news at geekwire.com and subscribe to our shows on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you get your podcasts.